Welcome to the Virtually Analog Podcast, where we explore Board Game Arena and the ever-blurring line between video and board games. I'm Lex, and I love board games.
I'm Shay, and I love video games.
So before we jump into the games that we play this week, I just wanted to take a moment to really set the tone for this episode. I had a little bit of an altercation, I think what you would call it, an interaction with someone on Facebook. Now, that's my fault for like having a Facebook to begin with, and like interacting with strangers on Facebook is always a bad idea. And, you know, my doctor tells me that it's very bad for my health, but, you know, I keep doing it anyway. There's a Facebook page dedicated to Uwe Rosenberg. Uwe Rosenberg is a game designer who has a few games on Board Game Arena. And someone posted in this Facebook group that they are adding cards to the Board Game Arena implementation to one of his games. And the first and only comment for a long time was this guy who got on purely to say that he thinks that there's no reason for digital implementations to exist in his mind, basically, and that it's a completely inferior way to like play the game. You know, he was very, I don't know, just kind of condescending in his tone, basically just saying like, you know, oh, I just prefer to play the game physical, and, you know, kind of saying like anybody who, kind of insinuating that anybody who plays on Board Game Arena isn't really playing the game, right?
Yeah.
And so I should have just kept on scrolling, left it alone, like this guy is gonna have his opinions and it's not worth my time, but, you know, I'm a big idiot. And I decided to respond back, and I very politely said, you know, hey, you know, nobody is saying that you have to play Board Game Arena games, you know, like, but for people like me who don't have a lot of time to play games, or just other, you know, things that come up, like Board Game Arena is a great way to still experience games. And, you know, it could have just ended there. You know, like, I wasn't trying to like instigate this big debate or like, you know, generate a huge response from him, negative or positive. I was just trying to let him know, like, hey, you know, if you're, you know, if you don't like to play board games on Board Game Arena, that's fine. Just scroll past a post about Board Game Arena then. Like, just like, anyway, this dude like wrote me a couple of novels in responses about basically saying, what he was basically saying was that I mismanage my time, and that's why, and I don't have my priorities right, and that's
that was the best part, where he was like, you having kids is a worse priority than playing board games.
He was basically saying that if I really wanted to, I could manage my time better so that I could play board games more than physical board games more than digital board games. And first of all, that's true. First of all, he's not wrong. I'm sitting here having an argument with a stranger on Facebook instead of playing games. So, you know, he's got a point there. I gotta say, you know, gotta give credit where credit's due. Secondly, maybe I don't want to, you know, like it's not just about time. It's also about like mental capacity and like having three kids, one of which has autism. Like, it drains me, and like working full time, it absolutely drains me. And at the end of the day, the thought of physically getting out a game, setting it up, like learning the rules if I don't already know it, it just like the thought of that on most days is just overwhelming. This guy could not empathize with that at all. He just thought that was like completely like that idea is just so far out of like what he has experienced in this life that he could just not get through his thick skull that there are people out there who Board Game Arena is really the only good way for them to play games. Now, I bring all this up not to like bash this person. I'm not going to dox them or anything. As they have since deleted all their comments, so I think they realized they were kind of being a jerk. And you can't even find that conversation on Facebook anymore. But the reason why I wanted to bring it up and talk about it is that the bright side of all this is this is actually a conversation that is happening a lot less now. If you can believe it, before, you know, 2020, before the pandemic times, I would get into a fight about Tabletop Simulator or Board Game Arena or all these things, like, almost on a weekly basis. You know, like, there were so many people. When I would go to board game nights and talk about, like, oh, yeah, I play this game on Board Game Arena and it was great. Or, like, I played it on Tabletop Simulator. It was great. People would just give me this look like, oh, like, why would you play board games on your computer? Like, that completely defeats the purpose, right? The great thing is that now, in like after the pandemic, people have seen the value of being able to play games like remotely, right?
Yeah.
And like you're not limited to the physical, like what you can actually physically obtain and what you like the people around you in terms of like your choices. And that's like that's what makes Board Game Arena great, is that it makes board games accessible to everyone. And like Shay, you're living proof of that, right? Like,
yeah.
Like there was no way you would like play any of these games without Board Game Arena.
I mean, to that point, like you and I live several states away, so like,
yeah,
we physically could not play these board games together,
right? And we play video games together, and that's great, and that's fine, and like. Hell yeah, you know, like I love playing video games with you, but like I just, you know, hopefully you agree. I think that there's something about playing board games that's just a different experience, right?
Yeah.
And like this guy wanted to make it seem that like there was no possible way to get the full board game experience in a digital sphere, and I just could not disagree more with that, right?
Yeah. I mean, it does. It does sound like that this guy's missing out on a lot of experiences in his life, yeah, in general. So.
And so I screenshotted this whole conversation and I posted it in the Turn-Based Arena Discord. Everybody should join that, by the way. It's a wonderful place. And they were, you know, everybody was just so positive about it. They were just like, pay no attention to this troll. Like, this guy is not worth your time. Just go play the games that you want and don't worry about these close-minded people. And it's like, that's so true. It's like, I wouldn't want to play games with this guy physically or digitally anyway. Right. So I don't know why I'm arguing with that. But anyway, that's my long rant on, you know, why we're doing this, right? Like, why we're trying to bring more attention to Board Game Arena. I think that as one last little comment, I will say that, like, going back to, like, pre-pandemic versus post-pandemic times, you know, there were some big figures in the board game scene, like big designers and podcasters who would, you know, before the pandemic would trash playing games digitally, and they would not want their games on Tabletop Simulator. They would not want their games on Board Game Arena. And then when the pandemic happened and it became the only way for them to play test their games, for them to share their games and like raise awareness of the games on Kickstarter and stuff, like they completely changed their tune. And I felt so like I would get so aggravated whenever I would hear, like, when I'd be listening to my favorite podcasts and, like, otherwise these guys were great. And then to hear them trash digital games made me so sad, right? Like, right. I would just be like, oh, like, why can't you understand how great this is of a thing? And then the pandemic kind of completely changed all the landscape of that. And so I get to feel, like, smug and self-righteous. The fact I'm like, I told you guys that this is a great thing, and now you all see why. So, you know, it's, you know, it's gotten to the point where I got to go to a physical game night, last weekend, and three guys there, after we got done playing a game or whatever, they're like, oh, are you on Board Game Arena? What's your username? And I ended up adding like three guys and playing games with them on Board Game Arena, where in the past, like, you know, I'm not saying that this is how these guys would be, but like if I was to mention that, you know, I play games on Board Game Arena, like I said, I would just get dirty looks. So I'm very, very thankful that the landscape is changing in a very positive way. So,
and speaking of changing landscapes, our first game today is Forbidden Island.
Oh my God, that was so smooth. Like, anybody who doesn't know about Forbidden Islands, like, what are you talking about?
That's nothing, but...
they're soon going to realize...
Right.
What amazing transition that was. Okay, Shay, tell me about Forbidden Island, please.
I would love to, Lex. Dare to discover Forbidden Island. Join a team of fearless adventurers on a do-or-die mission to capture 4 sacred treasures from the ruins of this perilous paradise. Your team will have to work together and make some pulse-pounding maneuvers... as the island will sink beneath every step. Race to collect the treasures and make a triumphant escape before you are swallowed into the watery abyss. Forbidden Island is a game for 2 to 4 players. It takes about 30 minutes and has a complexity rating of 2 out of 5 on Board Game Arena. The game was designed by Matt Leacock with art by CB Kanga, and it was developed for Board Game Arena by user Jeffy.
Yeah, so that description doesn't really talk. It does a great. It has more in it than the pandemic description on Board Game Arena.
Yeah.
So it has that going for it, but it doesn't really get too much into the mechanics of these games. Actually, I would say off the top, like we can almost combine both of these games while we're talking about them because they are so similar.
Yeah.
Right. So Forbidden Island and Pandemic, both designed by Matt Leacock, both published by Z-Man Games. They're both cooperative games, and I would say they are two of like the most influential / pivotal cooperative games out there. I think that basically Forbidden Island and Pandemic did for co-op games what Catan did for gaming, for board games in general, right? Like before Forbidden Island, before Pandemic, there wasn't a whole lot of great options out there for cooperative gaming. And like Matt Leacock, I'm like a huge Matt Leacock fanboy. You'll hear me complain a lot about like for like these two games as we're talking about them. But I just want to say off the top that like Matt Leacock is an awesome guy. I've watched a lot of interviews with him. I haven't met him personally, but I've watched a lot of interviews. He's a really like he's a nerdy guy, but he's really like fun to watch. And I think that I love, love, love cooperative games. And he has had such a huge impact on that. And he's like the reason why cooperative games like have kind of evolved to the point that they have. And so I can forgive a lot of like the design missteps or the design flaws in these first two games, because, you know, it was his early work, you know, like you can't really judge everything. Forbidden Island has a bunch of sequel games that he made. He has Forbidden Sky and Forbidden Desert. I think that's it. But I own and play both those games. I love those games. And then Pandemic has a ton of different sequels and expansions and a legacy game version of it with different seasons. Like Pandemic has just blown up. It's one of the biggest co-op games of all time. So... I'm a big Matt Leacock stan over here, but to get into the mechanics of what this means, what a cooperative game means. So just, you know, in case my mom is listening to this podcast, in most board games, you know, you're facing off against your opponents, the physical, like the people actually playing with you. In this game, you are trying to win together as a team, win or lose together as a team. And so what Matt Leacock developed in both these games is this card-based system where at the end of every person's turn, you're drawing these cards from this deck and bad things are happening. It's basically like in Forbidden Island, it's the island's turn. So the island is sinking and you're flipping over these cards, which basically, sink tiles, making it harder to navigate the island. And then in Pandemic, you're flipping these cards that have cities on them and diseases are spreading to those cities. So that's kind of the main mechanics, and kind of both of the game, or the main like cooperative element mechanics for both of these games. On your turn, you're taking a certain number of actions. In Forbidden Island, it's 3 actions. In Pandemic, it's 4 actions, and you're basically moving around the map. In Forbidden Island, you're shoring up tiles so they don't sink. In Pandemic, you're curing or, you know, treating 4 different strands of viruses. And Yeah, I think, you know, you're collecting sets of colored cards in both games. And Forbidden Island, you are trying to turn those cards. You're getting a certain amount so that you can turn them in to claim the treasures. In Pandemic, you're getting a certain amount so you can turn them in to cure diseases. They're very, very, very similar games. Shane, am I missing anything?
No, that's about it.
There's a bunch of different, like, especially with Pandemic, there's quite a few mechanics, and I'll get into that as well, like, when we talk about our pros and our cons. I think that Pandemic has a lot more going on in it than Forbidden Island does.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they're very similar mechanically. So,
yeah.
I think that to just dive right into the pros and cons, for Forbidden Island, my pros is that it's really, really easy to teach. Shay, I didn't even make you watch a rules video for this one. We just kind of jumped in. It helped that we had actually had played it before. So... you just needed a kind of a brief brush up on the rules, and right. We were able to jump right in. I think it's one of the very best introductions into cooperative games. If you have someone who has never played a cooperative game before, and one time I was telling my mom that I was playing a cooperative game, and she was like, "So who wins?" And I was like, "Well, we either all do." She's like, "Who wins the table? Like, if you guys all lose, who wins? Does the table win?" I was like, okay, Bob. Basically, yes. And so, yeah, I think that if you have someone like that in your life who it's really hard to make them understand, like, how a cooperative game works, this is it. I think one of the other big pros is that it definitely it's one of the reason I think it became such a successful cooperative games is that it really it creates a very tense sense of, like, oh my gosh, are we gonna make it? You know, at almost every point in this game, whenever you're flipping cards over, you're like, oh, please don't be this specific card, please don't, like, there's it creates, you know, in competitive games it's really easy to create tension between other players. In cooperative games, it's much harder to create tension when everyone's on the same team, right?
Yeah.
I think this game does a great job of that. What do you think, Shay? What's your pros for this game?
It's real, real easy to pick. I mean, you covered it, I think, most of my stuff here. It's real easy to pick up. It's very straightforward mechanics. It's just...
What do you think of the theme? Do you feel like you're on an island that's sinking around you? And that you're
trying to navigate. Yes, yeah. In the sense that, like, you know, the tile flipping feels very authentic as you're, like, losing these parts of the board, basically. Right. It does feel like you're in a temple that is falling apart, or on an island that's falling apart. However, like, I don't know. I feel like putting, like, a design on all of them, all of the tiles, made it seem like a very janky island.
True.
You know what I mean?
All the tiles, they're not very uniform in theme.
Right.
And so it does kind of, yeah, I get that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I, you know, I easily can suspend that. The suspension of reality is easy to get to.
For sure. So. I think that, like, the mechanics of just drawing, like, colored cards and getting sets of them and then, like, trading those in to get the treasures, that does not do it. Like, it makes sense mechanically, but, like, thematically, it's like, what is that supposed to represent? You know,
right,
like,
yeah.
I think
yeah.
it would be better if it was, like, map fragments or something,
yeah.
or I don't know, something else, but it doesn't, I mean, it's fine. I think anything else would probably be too confusing, maybe. I don't know, but
yeah,
I think yeah. that thematically, for such a simple game and for how simple the components are, it really does do a great job of making you feel like you're a team of explorers trying to get these treasures, trying to get off, how important the, like, pilot's landing, fool's landing, whatever it's called, is. Like, I think that it's really an interesting. Same with Pandemic. Like, Pandemic's theme kind of shines through as well, but we'll get to that one. What about cons for this game for you, Shay?
I think player roles play way too much into how the game goes. So like for our game, I was the diver and you were the pilot. And I think that that may have, like, I don't think I got the full experience of the game because like the diver can basically move around anywhere if it's like, if they're connected by water. So like, I don't really know that I got the exact difficulty of the game, but yeah, I think the player roles do influence the game a little bit too much. Also I think the randomness of the tiles that flood and get flipped, I don't think that's offset by the player's movement, like your ability to move, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, it's one thing for, you know, you not to not be able to go one way because a tile flooded, but it's a different thing to not be able to get where you need to go. Right. Unless you get,
I think that's something that plays more into the strategy when we're not the roles that we are.
Right.
Like, it's much more important to shore up certain tiles. Like, you need to make sure that you can create
you have a path
back.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And like for us, it's like, well, I'm the pilot and you're the diver.
So who cares? Just zipping around. We were just zipping around the board. It didn't matter. But trying to think of like a normal game, I think that I don't know that movement works as well, especially as the water level rises and more of the tiles are getting flipped, you know?
Yeah, very true. I think that in most of the games that I've played of this, it has always been very, very close. Today's game was completely different. We got very, very lucky early on, and that pretty much just says like, okay, you just win then. There was really not that many tense moments. Usually this game is really good at manufacturing tense moments, and then towards the end, you know, no matter how lucky you got, usually it's like, oh, are we really gonna pull this off? We have to get the exact right cards. Like, I've played this game once where it was like it came down to a 50-50 draw. It's like, we have to draw one more card. If it's this one tile, we lose. If it's not, we win. Exactly. There's like two cards left in the deck, and it's like we flipped it, and it's like, it, you know, that can feel really, really good when it goes your way, but it can also feel really, really bad when it doesn't go your way.
Right.
Like in the game of Pandemic that we just finished, which we'll talk about in a second. But I think, yeah, the randomness of both of these games I'd put in the cons. I think Matt Leacock knows it too. I think that in a lot of the future co-op games that he designed, a lot of the different Pandemic games and Forbidden Sky and Forbidden Desert, he put more thought into how much randomness, you know, influences the game and how to better offset that. But anyway, sure. It seems like whenever we talk about cons at all in any of these games, it comes down to randomness. Maybe we should just play chess. It's funny because I do like randomness in my games, but you know, it's hard. It's a hard thing to balance, and it takes a really special game to do it right. And I feel like this comes close, but it falls short.
I don't know that us as like, obviously the meaning of the word con implies that it's a bad thing, but I don't know. Right. I think when we talk about randomness for a lot of these games, it is more of a talking point.
Sure.
It usually slides
into our cons, unless it's like a game that does it really well, then we'll put in our pros. But usually for most of these games, and like we've started off with simpler games, and I think simpler games are gonna like suffer from that more. But anyway, it's fine. This is a great game. I highly recommend it. Where do we put it on our tier list, Shay?
I'm gonna high B, I think is where
I'm good with that. I think high B is great. Cool. Okay, so just to, you know, quickly go through the details for Pandemic. Pandemic, we already kind of talked about it at length. So Pandemic is a game designed by Matt Leacock, published by Z-Man Games, illustrated by Jay Kappel and C. Hanisch. It's a game for 1 to 4 players, so you can play this one solo. It takes about 20 to 45 minutes, depending on how many people, but depending on a lot of factors, honestly. But
yeah,
it also has a 2 out of 5 complexity rating. And it was developed for BGA by Moof. So, yeah, I think that a lot of what we said about Forbidden Island can be said about this game. The themes are obviously very different. I think that I prefer the Forbidden Island theme more than the pandemic. Maybe it's just because of the landscape.
It's less true to life.
Yeah, it's like a little too close to home. That's what, one of the things I put in my cons is, like, I think you did too. It's like world events in the past 2 years have made this game a little, not necessarily problematic, but just like, it's funny. Like, I was talking to my friend who owns a game store nearby us, and he said that the sales for Pandemic shot through the roof.
Really?
After 2020. Yeah. That people, man, really wanted to buy this game. I think, and more seriously, my bigger con with this game is that it just has a few too many mechanisms that depend on other players to make it a good, like, BGA game. I would never, ever play this game asynchronously or, like, turn-based, like, days between turns. Or I wouldn't even play it real-time without, like, live voice chat.
Yeah.
Because there's so much, especially, like, when you're playing with three or four other players, like, everybody is so, teamwork is such an important part of this game that the only way to play this really on BGA is real time with people who are on either text chat or voice chat. But
yeah, there's definitely a lot of planning that needs to take place between players for this game.
That being said, Moof, who developed the BGA implementation, I think they did a fantastic job. I think the production value is great. I love, like, the little rotating cubes. It's almost better than playing physically, because physically you can kind of lose track of the cubes on the game board. But yeah, in this digital version, there's no way. Like, the cubes are rotating. You can see exactly, like, what's going on. And I really like it. But What are your pros and cons for this one?
So my pros for this game, Lex, it's got very fluid, quick gameplay. Again, if you're playing, like, live or in person with people, your decisions are really, really limited by, like, what's available to you. So you don't really have to, like, stress about what's going on. I mean, you know, it's in the back of your mind, but you don't really have to, like, stress about what's happening on the other side of the world. Because you have meaningful movements to make, like, in between that problem and where you're at right now. I the decision making is not difficult, in the moment. It's just you have to kind of plot out four or five moves ahead sometimes, based on where you want to get to. And how many actions you have. My cons for this one, the randomness can hit you hard, fast. Case in point, during our game tonight, we had two outbreaks, and in one card, we went to the lose condition of 8 outbreaks.
Which was crazy, because we were one turn away from winning.
We
cured three diseases. I had all the cards. I was ready to win the game on my turn.
Yep.
And then, like, it's not like we should have, like, it's not like you went to the wrong city and cured the wrong city and that's why we lost. It literally was just like, well, there was nothing we could have done. Like,
right.
All those outbreaks triggered, and there was nothing that we could have done to stop it in any meaningful way. And we just lost because of it. It was pretty brutal. It was so brutal seeing that marker just go
just
down that track.
Just keep going and going
over
and
over and over. It's like, well, all right, I guess we lose. So,
Yeah, the other thing I had for it is that the epidemic card that is similar to, like, the rising waters in Forbidden Island, where it's like the board gets extra cards to play. That seemed to come up a lot.
Yes.
And I don't know how many.
So something that happens in both Forbidden Island and this game is that you have a deck that you're drawing from at the end of your turn. And usually those cards are good things. They're like your colored cards. They're your events. They're you know, good things for you. But then during setup in the game, which BGA takes care of for you so you don't see it, but in the setup of the game, those bad cards get shuffled into sections, And that's actually how you also determine the difficulty. So we played both of these games on like normal difficulty, but if you want to play it on harder difficulty, you shuffle more of those cards within sections of that deck.
Oh, gotcha.
So theoretically, if like if odds are always in your favor, you should see those cards like spaced out in a good way, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of the times, that's not how, especially for me, because my luck sucks. sometimes those cards will happen right after, like, you might have one section where that card's on the bottom, and then the section under that, the card's on the top. And so you'll just get two epidemics in a row. And it's like,
yeah,
well, there's nothing we could have done about that.
Yeah.
So, I think that the card, the deck-based kind of AI system is a really neat thing. It's a revolutionary, but I think modern day co-op games have come a long way in refining that and making it a little less bogus, a little less like, well, I drew the wrong card, so we lost, you know, that happens in both of these games so frequently and you just lose your sense of agency. So, I think that it's more forgivable in a game like Forbidden Island where it's shorter. Pandemic, that game was quick for us, but usually the game goes on a little bit
longer. Extremely lucky first turn.
Yeah, the first turn you just like cured one of the diseases and it was like, oh, sweet. I think that this game usually goes on a lot longer and it's a lot more of a setup when you're playing physically. And for you just to lose because of a card flip in a game that's like that does not feel great. And it's one of the reasons I don't play this game physically very often. But where are we sticking this on the tier list?
I'm going to give it an A.
Yeah.
Straight A.
I'd say A or low A. So I'm good with A.
I did like it a little bit more than Forbidden Islands.
So yeah, those were the two games we played this week. Moving on to some news and board game news. I just have a few quick things. There was an announcement for a Roll and Write version of Orleone. And so Orleone is not a game on Board Game Arena. It is one of my favorite board games of all time. I wish it was on Board Game Arena. That would be amazing. But they have a Roll and Write version, which, Shay, you know what that means now since we covered Roll and Write.
Yeah.
A lot of board games are like get Roll and Write versions these days. And I'm very glad Orleone is one of those because it's a great game. And I think they could do some really cool stuff with a Roll and Write version. It is going to be called Joan of Arc Draw and Write. So I'm really looking forward to that.
That sounds like the Netflix spinoff of a like Disney property. Like they get it and make 73 episodes of a children's TV show.
So getting back into Board Game Arena news, Catan is officially released on Board Game Arena. Last week we talked about how it just went into beta and it's already out of beta and officially launched on Board Game Arena. So that's pretty amazing. And there's a new game that just entered into beta. It's called Jump Drive, which is a game that's kind of a simplified version of Race for the Galaxy, which I'm really excited to try it. I haven't yet, but it seems really fun. So that is pretty much it for board game news. Shay, what do we got video game news-wise?
All right. In video game news, Lex, somebody inexplicably thought that Lollipop Chainsaw should get what I think is a remake. About a week and a half, actually, while we were recording last week, a story popped up on my computer that the developer or the director of the original Lollipop Chainsaw gave like an update that I like it was extremely vague. It was like something is coming for Lollipop Chainsaw and no further details. Lollipop Chainsaw, a video game from a while ago that's got some problems, is, I guess, coming back.
Their website still uses Adobe Flash Player.
Yikes. But yeah, that's apparently there's something happening there. No details, but I just thought it would be, I thought it was fun that somebody thought that Lollipop Chainsaw was the next one we should bring up.
Anything, yeah.
Yeah. For all of you Final Fantasy heads out there, it was announced this week that Final Fantasy 16 will not be an open world game.
Whoa, that's kind of a big deal, right?
Yeah, it's going to be much more linear and locked off, then it's
because 15 final. Was an open, like that was the whole point of 15.
Yeah, I think like- I think maybe what happened was 15 was a lot. 15 yeah. was a big open world game.
It was.
And I think they don't want to do that again.
I don't blame them.
I mean, especially
I bet you they could, like it, like I'm sure a lot goes into making an open world game, but like I bet they just really thought about like the direction they wanted the series to go in, and it's like we want to tell a story here, and it's so much easier to tell a good story in a linear yeah. based game.
Well, I think
right?
I think additionally like them having Final Fantasy 14, like the online game, like that's all open world also, you know what I mean? So I think
I
it feels like the plan is to take the like main entry story games back into kind of a linear path and then right. to play in the world in 14. So
sure. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then finally, this is just the funniest piece of news to me because of how much of a disaster the original launch of this game was. But a recent port of Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2 to the Switch is currently unbeatable because of a bug, proving that no one looked at the game before porting it in the first place.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, so I think I want to say that the Switch port came out like 10 days ago because it popped up on my eShop and I immediately bought it because I loved the first game and I acknowledged the flaws of the second game. And since then, like about a week after it launched, somebody was like, hey, you know that after the cutscene on The Last World plays, the game crashes, right? And they're like, yeah, we know. We're going to work on it, but we don't have an ETA for you on when we're going to fix this game ruining bug. Knights of the Old Republic 2 will forever be in hell.
And that's going to do it for our episode. You can share the show at virtuallyanalog.info. Please shoot us an email if you have any questions about any of the games that we talked about, or if you have ways that we can make the show better or more entertaining. We love getting emails so much. It's like one of the main reasons why I do this podcast. So send us an email at virtuallyanalog@gmail.com. And the links for all of our social media and everything and past episodes, all at virtuallyanalog.info. I think that just about does it. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And we will see you guys next week.
Bye.